The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Gangsters, what's up, guys?
John Anik, Kenny Florian.
Oh, my God!
You want a podcast? Great. So you have some audio on your website that nobody goes to.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Oh, April Fools, are we still doing that? It's Monday, April 1st, episode 196 of the Anik and Florian Podcast. I am in New York City doing voiceovers for EA Sports UFC 4. I wake up this morning, Ken Flo, and I see a post from Tim Kennedy that he's coming out of retirement. I don't know what fucking day it is. So I retweet that shit, and everyone's calling me a fool all day. What are you going to do?
He got you, dude. He got you on April Fool. You didn't see it coming.
So are you an April Fool's Day guy? Have you played any pranks on anyone today? But level with me, bro.
Not in many, many years. I used to do the thing where, like, you know, the spray hose that's connected to the sink. I used to tape that down as a kid.
Right.
It pointed upwards.
Right.
And then when you turn the faucet on, it sprayed everywhere. I did that for a few years, but I'm not really an April Fool's guy now.
So I think when I'm home, I certainly would take some sort of opportunity to mess with my wife or my mom, right? Some gullible people out there in my family, with all due respect, right? But no, I saw Tim's post. And I know his last fight was against Kelvin Gastelum, which was pretty forgettable for Team Kennedy. So I know how hard he works in life and in training. So I didn't think it was out of the realm of possibility that Tim Kennedy would come back for a UFC fight or two. And needless to say, I heard from the MMA masses shortly thereafter that I should check the date. And it is April 1st. We're glad to be with you. Sorry for a little delay today. I was busy during the day, as was Ken Flo. TJ had a babysitter quit. So the schedules have aligned, and here we are a little bit late coming at you. So we're going to recap this Philly show. Ray Longo is going to join us in 10 minutes. It's always interesting talking to Longo at the end of his day, because at times he sounds a little bit different when you talk to him at the end of the day. So we'll see if Ray Longo has been drinking. I've been drinking. I haven't done this podcast with alcohol in my system all that often, but I just went up to the rooftop bar at the Viceroy here in New York City, banged a couple of Captain and Cokes with our guy Jimmy Stewart, and I'm a lightweight when it comes to the alcohol tolerance, so we're just going to have to see how it goes over the next 45 minutes or so.
How long are you in New York City for? Because I'm going to be there on Thursday night.
Oh, I leave Wednesday night.
That's too bad. You're out of here. See?
Unbelievable.
I would have finally got the... Could give you
I know,
a hug.
I know. Oh, well. I mean, I love those Ken Flo hugs. Well, I hope to see you soon. I got to come out to LA at some point and pay off this power hour.
Yes, sir.
Before it gets too late. Right. I don't like to let too much time expire before paying off these bets.
The way it's going right now for this year, man, I don't know. We might as well wait. Maybe I'll do a trade. I'll be like, you know what? You don't have to do it this year because it's not looking too good for me right now.
Maybe call it a wash, or we could do a power hour together at the end of the year or something.
There you go.
But hey, man, I know not to rest on my laurels. No lead is safe when it comes to Ken Flo, who caught absolute fire last December with that backloaded UFC schedule and rallied from like 15 points down to make it 3-1 or 2-1, whatever it is in the main event challenge. But I digress. We have a lot to get to, obviously, when it comes to this UFC Philadelphia show. And explicit language. I mean, Justin fucking Gaethje, okay? Like, I don't know if I'm getting a Gaethje tattoo. My fantasy football team is already called Team Gaethje. I am an objective party as the lead play-by-play voice of the UFC. But if you're a mixed martial arts fan and this guy is not your first, second, or third favorite fighter, then show me your list, Kenny, because this guy is absolutely incredible. There's just no one really like him. And the fact that he was able to do that to one of the most decorated strikers in UFC history, in Edson Barboza, just another feather in the cap of the highlight, Justin Gaethje.
Which is another reason why he should be in the top three as far as getting paid in the UFC, in my opinion.
Yeah,
this
right.
guy is going to deliver excitement. It doesn't matter. There's certain guys that, you know, have a style where they're reckless and a little hesitant, or, you know, Gaethje knows exactly what he's going to do. He's not sure if he's going to get knocked out himself, but he knows that he has to put himself in harm's way, and he is absolutely willing to do that time in and time out again, no matter who he's facing. And Edson Barboza is a very fast, talented, and dangerous striker, and Gaethje was able to get into the pocket and land that beautiful right hook. I mean, he's an absolute savage, and Gaethje, again, is one of those guys who should be paid handsomely for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, I think that a lot of fighters try to renegotiate their contracts after certain fights. You know, there are a lot of rumors that Ally Quint is a guy who tries to perpetually renegotiate his contracts. But like, if you're Justin Gaethje, right? We said before this fight, more bonuses than UFC fights. And yet again, another bonus. So I think it's 6 bonuses, 5 UFC fights, 3-2. But you're right. I mean, if this guy isn't making $350,000 to show, I mean, I don't know what he's worth. I don't know how you put a value on this guy. But when I'm calling the fight, I have to check my fan card at the door. When I'm doing a podcast like this, I can just sit here and look at my man Ken Flo and say, like, holy fucking shit, this guy, man. Like, that's all I can sit here and think to say. It's not because I've been drinking. Holy shit. You know what? Like, they're just, I can't think of a parallel in the sport. I mean, you've got guys like Robbie Lawler, eternally aggressive, forward moving, who are perennial fan favorite types. But I can't recall seeing anybody like Justin Gaethje in my time calling UFC fights.
Absolutely. And listen, there's very few of them. You have your Robbie Lawlers, you have your Tony Fergusons.
Yeah.
Listen, it's also the fact that he's going out there and he's winning with that style against very good fighters. And I think there's a certain energy that he brings into the octagon as well. It's not just him going out there and putting on exciting fights. There's a charisma, there's an excitement, there's an authenticity to Justin Gaethje that a lot of fighters are pursuing and claiming to be. Gaethje is that dude. Make no mistake about it. He's that dude.
So when I was interviewing him in the Octagon after the fact, Kenny, he said something to the effect of, I don't feel anything in there. You know, sometimes I wish I would, but like, this dude walks in there and he's throwing a water bottle to Trevor Whitman, loose as a goose, just totally unfazed by this fight atmosphere in the best of ways. You know, I think it's something that certainly works to his advantage, but he really just doesn't feel anything in there. And we've talked about guys like John Jones who love fight night and guys like your former teammate, George St. Pierre, that absolutely dreaded fight night. Certainly Gaethje is a guy cut from the John Jones cloth. He absolutely loves fight night, but it's crazy. Like, I don't know what you felt in there on fight night, but this is a guy who just doesn't feel any of the negative jitter type emotions when he is on the greatest proven ground in mixed martial arts. And I think it's something that he really is able to use to his advantage, Kenny. He's just totally calm, treats it like a sparring session. When the lights shine their brightest, he is truly at his best.
Some people are born to fight. Not everybody is. Gaethje is absolutely born to become a professional mixed martial artist.
Yeah.
He delivers excitement every single time out, win or lose. He is such a massive asset to the UFC.
He really is.
And the fans. I mean, this guy is the UFC. Talk about as real as it gets. He's authentic. He's not the kind of guy to just go out there and talk trash. Whatever comes out of his mouth is real, and he believes it. Whatever his hands do, whatever he does inside the octagon, that is real, and you better believe it or you're going to get knocked out. Gaethje is a real treasure, I tell you that.
And I'm glad you said that in terms of his value to the promotion, because when we go in and do those post-fight interviews after the fight, I try not to have too much in my head. I'm not really planning too much of it, right? I want it to be concise. I want it to be efficient. But all I could really think to say to him is that, you know, promotionally, we are really fortunate to have you. So I'm glad you sort of echoed that sentiment. I want to throw a few things at you in terms of our conversations with Justin Gaethje. We sat down with him on Thursday. He gets defensive when you just focus on his chin and you don't focus on his defense. He feels like he has a real innate ability to roll with punches and minimize damage. And yet it seems like everybody naturally wants to talk about his legendary chin. But there were times in this fight where it was selective engagement, right? It wasn't reckless. And Trevor Whitman said to us on Thursday, you know, he sharpshoots the hell out of people in the gym. And that's what we're looking for him to do on fight night, to be selective, to not just fire himself into the chaos when it ensues. And I thought at times in this fight, even after stunning Barboza early, he was very measured.
Listen, I think he's a smarter fighter than what he gets credit for. He utilizes a style that was utilized back in the day. I actually utilized it very early on in my career. And it's called shelling. A lot of the SBG guys are known for it as well. Joe Frazier did it as a boxer, but he does it a little bit different, almost like he's combing his hair. Quentin Rampage Jackson did it. Gaethje will do it moving forward. And what he offers up is the top of his head. And for a lot of guys, you know, that are hitting that, you're going to hurt your hands. And that is the hardest part of your head. That is one of the hardest parts of your body, period. So from there, he's able to deflect a lot of shots, just kind of combing, being in that shell position. He doesn't take a lot of shots in that process where he becomes vulnerable when he does, which is what Eddie Alvarez was able to expose. So for him, he's going to press forward with that style. I thought he was a lot smarter in this fight against Barbosa. Not only that, as he was moving forward, he was cautious in approaching those leg kicks. If he did take a leg kick, he would return with the leg kick. Right. I thought it was an excellent performance from Justin Gaethje. If he can continue to improve his defense and be selective in how he moves forward, he will be that much more difficult to deal with.
In terms of Edson Barboza in this fight, it's hard to remember him being on the wrong side of a beating like this. And crazy to think that his wife went into labor about 4 hours after the fight, and they got him an earlier flight, and he was able to get back to South Florida to witness the birth of his second child and his first daughter. But in talking to his coaches, Marcos D'Amato Pahumpa and Alex Davis after the fact, they weren't trying to take credit away from Justin Gaethje, but they just felt like the game plan specifically early on in round one was just to circle. And I don't know if you have anything for me on Barboza, but it seems like he didn't execute what they had talked about really over the last 6 or 8 weeks, at least early on in the fight. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I will say this. Listen, yeah, you want to circle. When you get a guy that's coming forward like a Justin Gaethje, though, yeah, you need to give him a reason to stop coming forward. So even if you're circling, yeah, okay, that's cool. You're going to circle. You don't get hit. I get it. But what does that do to the guy that's chasing you? Does that stop a Jason-type character in Friday the 13th from coming? That's not going to scare that guy. At the end of the day, you can keep running from Jason, but you got to do something to stop him. Right. At the end of the day, and Justin Gaethje isn't going to be affected by someone running away from him. In fact, you're handing him the baton. You're saying, I'm afraid of you. I'm just going to run away from you. That gives power to Justin Gaethje. Now all he has to do is cut off the cage because he knows you're not going to throw. So you need something, some kind of intercepting weapons. You need some kind of intercepting weapons to guys like a Tony Ferguson, to guys like a Robbie Lawler, whether it's a double leg takedown, whether it's a kick down the middle. You need to get respect from those guys, because running away isn't the only answer. And I get it. That's probably a safe way. But I think in Barbosa's mind, he said, listen, I have to stand my ground at least once or twice here and do something. But he was circling when he got hit as well. So I don't know.
All right. Well, Justin Gaethje, your winner early on. 2.5 minutes into round one by TKO, 6th UFC bonus in 5 UFC fights. And he came in with a number 8 next to his name, and that was something that really didn't sit well with him. But all indications are that he's going to probably vault into the top 5 and be in some sort of title eliminator of sorts. And we're going to have more on that lightweight division later and get Ken Flo's thoughts as to who might be next for the great Justin Gaethje. But Ray Longo's been waiting all day for the Anakin Florian podcast. Let us get to the Ray Longo Minute.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute.
Starring Ray Longo.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
I mean, come on, man. What is this?
What's the problem, man?
This guy's a big shot doing video games, Kenny.
I know. Seriously, this guy.
We're over here searching for crumbs. This guy's in New York
doing
City.
Doing video games. Must be nice.
I took an Uber to Garden City to Law MMA this afternoon to try to surprise you, and you weren't fucking there.
Oh, you're full of shit, man. It's the only day I was not here. Did you really come over?
No, it's April Fool's Day. I figured I'd throw a little jab your way.
Oh, I was going to say, you know what's funny, man? Because I took today off only because you know, my freaking back, my hip, I've been killing myself. So I said, let me just see what happens if I rest. That's why, man, that was a good one. Good one.
It's
good
amazing. We talked about your durability over the last few weeks. And now for the first time in the 4-year history of this podcast, you're bitching about your well-being.
And ever since that day, it's been downhill.
So if I didn't work for the UFC and I was just a fan and I saw what Justin Gaethje did on Saturday night, I would have gone on the internet. I would have Googled Justin Gaethje gear and I would have bought like a Gaethje fight kit and everything Justin Gaethje related. I would have looked for his singlet from the University of Northern Colorado. Dude, what can you tell me about Justin Gaethje and your thoughts on him as a fighter and budding UFC superstar?
Well, I got to tell you, first off, man, when you talk about mindset, I think Justin Gaethje possesses one of the best mindsets in the game. And this is a guy, remember, he's coming off, he lost twice. So he doesn't let his losses bother him. He's a live by the sword, die by the sword type of guy. And I'll tell you what, man, he's a problem. He hits hard. He's willing to mix it up. I don't think I think he's got everything in perspective. I think he fights the way he wants to fight, and either you're on board with it or you're going to sleep.
So he has talked
psychologically.
In the past,
yeah, sorry.
Sorry, Ken Flo. I didn't know you were chopping
go
in there
it.
After
go
you.
Go for it.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, he talks a lot about wrestling fatigue and how, yeah, he could lean on the D1 wrestling chops, but he's worried about wrestling fatigue. And I think that's a very real thing. Just because he has those skills doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to help him win high-level MMA fights.
I think he doesn't bullshit. I think there's a guy that tells the truth when he speaks. And, you know, he tells you exactly what he's going to do. I think he had this fight in his head when he said, you know, 8 out of 10 times I'm going to get him, you know, 2 out of 10 times he's going to hit me with a big punch. I think he's pretty squared away. The wrestling fatigue, they're all afraid of tiring out wrestling, because if that happens, then you're left standing up. And if you have the wrong guy in front of you, that's an absolute nightmare. So I do agree with him on that. You know, if everybody has pretty good wrestling defense now, and if that zaps you of any type of energy, I think that for certain people, that's a big problem.
And Ray, you know, when you're going to face a guy like a Justin Gaethje or a Tony Ferguson or a Robbie Lawler, perhaps these are guys that, and Gaethje perhaps more than all of those guys, doesn't care what happens to him. He doesn't care. It doesn't matter. I get knocked out. Cool. I knock your head out into the stands. That's cool too. It does not matter. I'm going in there to fight you. I'm going to hurt you.
Period.
Exactly. How do you prepare? How do you prepare someone for something like that?
You know what, man? That's the challenge. But you're right, though. He does not care, and like, that's what I was trying to say. He had a couple of losses. They don't even remotely bother him. He's not going to dwell on it. Right. He's a live by the sword, die by the sword type of guy. He doesn't care, and that makes him really, really dangerous. You know, because before the fight, you know, I was even talking to Al. I was like, I think this is, you know, one guy's more technical, one guy's more tougher. Who's going to win? You know, it was coming down to that. After the fight, I guess we got our answer. Tough this one out. You know, he walked right through that guy.
Crazy.
Yeah. And I got to say, those who will say, oh, you know, how's Justin Gaethje's brain going to be in 20 years? And they'll tweet like a bowl of pudding or something. I will just tell you, when we sat down with this guy on Thursday, he is about as sharp and thoughtful and articulate as any fighter on this roster. And Ray, not unlike your guy, Ally Quinta, he doesn't cut a lot of weight to make 155 pounds, right? He wrestled at 157 pounds. He's sitting in our fighter meeting on Thursday eating, you know, candy, right? Like not eating like a Snickers bar, but eating, you know, like suckers or something, right? So I think he's got a lot of things going for him.
No, it is. Look, I met him briefly in Vegas. He seems like a great fucking dude, too.
He is.
I got to tell you. He seems like a really good guy. It was brief. I think he was getting something to eat at the counter. I was walking by to meet some people, and I think it was when Al maybe was supposed to fight him, and I said, man, sorry about what happened. And, you know, and he's like, dude, this is great. It's all great. He's just a good dude. He's a good guy. And I like seeing good things happen to good guys like that. And he is putting on a show. He's enjoying it. I think he even said something like he doesn't even know why he doesn't get nervous before the fights. This is a guy that really enjoys what the fuck he's doing for the right reason, I think.
Yeah.
So, man, he's a tough out for anybody. I got to tell you, after that fight, I don't know if I was sold on it before that fight, because I thought Barboza, you know, he was going to meet fire with fire, and Barboza picks up, you know, but he walked right. I'm surprised. He walked through way easier than I would have anticipated.
Yeah, we talked about that before you came on the air, what he said to me in the octagon after the fact. I don't know why. I don't feel anything in there. I mean, this dude's crazy.
Yeah, I think that means he's a psychopath, but I'm not really sure.
Yeah, in the best of ways.
Man, he's in the best of ways. No. I'm a Justin Gaethje fan, man. I don't think you cannot be. He's an exciting freaking fighter, man. He really is.
Oh, the best. So, former WSOF lightweight champion, 5 successful title defenses, now 5 UFC fights, 4 of them main events. And as we try to spin this thing forward, I know you and Raging Al have your sights set on Donald Cowboy Cerrone in a main event. I think it's May 4th in Ottawa, yeah. And rightfully so.
Yeah.
But when you look at the landscape of this lightweight division, for most of us laymen and women, the fight that seems to make the most sense chronologically in terms of the rankings is the winner for Justin Gaethje. That is the winner of this Ally Aquinta Donald Cerrone fight.
Yeah. Well, or the winner of Holloway and Poirier. I mean, those are the fights that have to be made. You know what I mean? So if the UFC has the ability to make some really good fights now, either way, but it's the winner and those other three guys are 100% in the mix. And, you know, I would want to see Al, you know, after a win with Cerrone, get a title shot. So
I understand.
Against Gaethje, that's awesome. You know what I'm saying? So that's more the way I'm looking. I think he paid his dues. He took that other fight on last minute notice. He did a great job with Kevin Lee. And let's see what happens. I think Poirier definitely deserved the fight. Holloway wants to come up. That's going to be a great fight. So with all of those guys, I agree with you. But there's some really good fights to make. But I guess but Poirier already beat Gaethje, so who knows? I mean,
I love those guys. I love those fights, guys. I'm just going to put this one out there and drop the mic. Tony Ferguson versus Justin Gaethje. Boom.
Drop it.
I'm out.
No, you're right, though, but we got to get Ferguson healthy.
Yes, true.
Right, true. Mentally, physically, yes, right.
Yeah, when is that guy going to be ready?
Right. I mean, could you imagine if they lock that door behind Justin Gaethje and Tony Ferguson? Can you fucking imagine? Take my money.
Yeah. Absolutely. Make that one happen, and hopefully Tony gets healthy.
I mean, there's 3 or 4 really good barn burners in there, man. They're all in there, you know. But again, I am concentrating just on Allen. Cerrone, it is a huge fight for him because I think it's got big implications afterwards and anybody after that. But right now, it's just concentrate on Cerrone. Obviously, is no joke, and we respect the guy a lot. And, you know, another guy that wants to fight, he might not like this other guy, though.
Right.
This other guy, he's a different cat altogether, man. I really enjoyed the crap out of that fight. I gotta tell you.
Unbelievable. I think the only complaint you could have is that maybe we only got 2.5 minutes, but it was absolutely epic. And man, if Gaethje and Ferguson fight, I might have to take the night off, just go to California, rip some bong hits with the flow or something, right? Because that's the one thing is like,
you guys' emotions were great after that fight. That was worth the whole watching the fight. How crazy you guys went.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, you know, but it's funny because Joe Silva would always say to me and Kenny before we would call fights, like, don't be afraid or don't forget to have fun. And sometimes when it comes to the preparation and we've got 13 fights and 7 hours of TV, even though we feel like we have the greatest job in the world, when you sit down in that seat, as Kenny can attest, fun isn't the thing that's on the forefront of your mind. You're excited for the fights, and that goes without saying. But there's just a lot of work, and we take our work seriously. But fights like that sort of remind you why this truly is the greatest, most unpredictable sport in the world.
And that's why Gaethje is such a star. He brings that energy. The reason you guys, you know, brought that energy and had that reaction is because of Justin Gaethje going out there and competing like he does. Like, he brings the authenticity, which brought the authenticity out of you guys. And that's why this guy, it really is a superstar.
Yeah, no, he's done a great job, this guy, really. And again, there's a million things that I read into with him that his mindset is just at the top of the, it's at the top of the top level mindset out of anybody I've ever seen.
Well, switching gears for a minute, you'll be happy to know when doing the video game today, I was able to drop a few Ray Longos in there and a few same Al's in there. So we got that same old Al thing going on in the next video game for you.
Beautiful. Oh, that makes my day.
So very
clear to my eye, John.
So, well, thank you, my man. All right, very quickly on Aljamain Sterling before we let you fly. So we have Marlon Moraes and Henry Cejudo coming up June 8th. In Chicago. A lot of people are talking about a potential title eliminator between Aljamain Sterling and Pedro Munhoz. Have you heard anything in terms of a timeline for Aljo and a next opponent? Nothing you can tell us, right?
No, I don't even. But I heard something about June, maybe. That's all Aljo told me. That's what he was looking at. Is there a June 8th card, maybe, or a June something?
See, that to me makes all the sense in the world. You guys got to make a hard push to be on that same June 8th card with Cejudo and Moraes, because if one of those guys falls out, it's going to be Pedro or Aljo.
Yeah, definitely, man. So, big exciting time at the gym. These guys are in the right spot. They're right where they want to be, and they're putting in the work. So, whatever happens, happens. But it's very, very exciting.
All right, last thing before we let you go, a new middleweight contender emerged over the weekend, the Norwegian, born in Sweden, Jack Hermansson, with a huge win against David Branch. 5 finishes in his last 6 fights. He didn't say anything about Chris Weidman with me in the octagon, but backstage, he talked about that matchup. Certainly, I think it's a long shot right now, given what body of work Chris has put on paper and given the fact that Hermansson wasn't even ranked going into the David Branch fight. But did you see the Hermansson fight, and did you have any thoughts on it?
I saw the Hermansson fight, and I thought the submission was I love David Branch. I mean, literally one of the nicest guys you'll meet. I always have a great time bullshitting with him, but I thought that submission was wild, the way he set that up.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was, he did a great job against a really, really, really good high-level black belt. So hats off to Hermansson. I think he did a fantastic job, and just the way he set that up, I never saw that before, but I haven't been on the mat in about 15 years. But it looked good to me.
Yeah, 15 years for you, 15 months for me, but who's counting?
Yeah. But Kenny, that was a cool setup, no?
Definitely, man. Definitely. And listen, I agree with you. I've trained with David Branch back in the day, and did not. I tell you what, I slept on Jack Hermansson. I didn't think he would be able to get it done, let alone get it done on the ground against David Branch. So impressed the hell out of me.
Yeah. I think Weidman's too much for him, but if that's the fight they want, maybe Weidman needs a break at this point. I mean, he just fights top-level guys all the time. So,
right.
Who knows?
So next UFC event for you, is it going to be May 4th in Ottawa?
No, I'm April 13th. I got Frivola fighting.
Oh, Matt, the Steamroller Frivola coming up in Atlanta. The Tarantula, right?
Yeah. We got to give the Steamroller a little love. So it'll be April 13th. I'm going to try to get in and out on that one to get back for Al.
Right.
We go right to Ottawa with Marab and Al. So big stuff for the gym. And in between that, I'm doing a show at the Garden with some local kickboxers and stuff like that. But at least I can get in and out on that. So busy, busy time as usual.
So I've noticed the movie roles continue to pile up for Ray Longo. I don't know that you're promoting your involvement. I don't know that you're promoting your involvement as well as you should, but dude, how are all these motion pictures coming together? You got legitimate acting chops. You must really enjoy this stuff.
I'll tell you, it's a great release for me. It's really fun. It's challenging because I've never done it before. And, I got to do a little martial arts in that last show, which was great. And you didn't get the final scene of that, but it's really cool. But I loved the Disarm. I thought came out great. And that's all, just having fun, man. That's it. But who knows? Who knows?
You're the most badass bartender I've ever seen in my life.
That's it. Well, I was I was running a liquor store, but same.
Oh, okay. Sorry. All right. All right, Ray Longo, great stuff, buddy. We'll go deeper on Frivola and Jalen Turner next week. Turner seems like he's 6'7". So we'll talk about that next week, buddy. Thanks for the time.
Awesome. All right, guys. Take it easy, man.
The great Ray Longo here every week on the Anik and Florian podcast, dating to episode 1 back in April of 2015. So I touched on the wrestling fatigue thing a little bit with Ray Longo, Kenny, and I respect Gaethje when we're in our fighter meeting on Thursday and Dominic Cruz is sort of pressing him, even though Edson Barbosa came in statistically with the best takedown defense among active lightweights. Gaethje, that was not going to be what he was going to lean on, and he basically said, he's like, you can't pin him, right? And I know you can submit him, but Justin Gaethje is certainly not a submission guy, but I think for wrestlers that aren't offensive BJJ guys, it's like, yeah, I can take him down, but dude, I'm not going to try to pin him, and I want to entertain the fans, and that's just not going to be the way I fight, and that's it.
For sure, and listen, you got to look at what your strengths are, and if perhaps you have a wrestling style that exerts a lot more energy, then you're probably going to avoid that or not do it as much. So I totally get that. That is a guy in Justin Gaethje who's you know looking at his strengths and weaknesses as a fighter and what he can do against the guy that he's going against and how he matches up against that person and utilizing that style. And he's doing it with great success so far. So, you know, can he be a little bit safer? Sure. There's always improvement in technique and all that. But whatever Gaethje's doing, it's working so far, man.
What a fucking animal. Congratulations animal. To Justin Gaethje. And we talked a little bit about the Tony Ferguson fight. And remains to be seen as to how Tony Ferguson's personal situation is going to work itself out. But he is training, and hopefully he can return in the not-too-distant future. I think that fight makes a lot of sense as a main event on ESPN, potentially. And the other reason why I think it makes a lot of sense is because Max Holloway and Dustin Poirier are fighting for the interim lightweight championship right. 12 days from now. And in theory, Kenny, the winner is going to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov. Dana White has come out and said as much. And I know sometimes they reverse course, but correct me if I'm wrong. If Khabib is fighting the winner of Poirier and Holloway, it's going to be at least one more fight for Justin Gaethje. And, you know, I'll throw out Tony Ferguson, Ia Quinta, Cerrone, maybe Anthony Showtime Pettis. I mean, you got to think Gaethje's next opponent comes out of that mix.
I agree. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, I think it's something that makes sense the way that, you know, things are heading. I think Ferguson and Gaethje will be looking for dance partners. Why not put them both in there? That would be an absolute classic. I mean, how can it not?
And Conor McGregor with another likely semi-retirement. I know neither of us put too much stock in that, but
yeah.
It remains to be seen as to whether or not Conor McGregor is going to fight at all in 2019. As far as where Edson Barboza goes from here, you know, he's not hell-bent on winning a UFC championship like a lot of these lightweight contenders are. And I don't say that to knock him, right? But when I ask certain guys like David Branch if he will ever be able to enjoy his retirement and be satisfied if he doesn't at least get a chance to fight for the UFC middleweight title, he says it's going to eat away at me for the rest of the life, the rest of my life. And David Branch is a guy, Kenny, who won two major titles, right? In two different divisions and defended the belts multiple times, right? So it's not like he doesn't have any belts at home, and yet he will be totally unsatisfied if he doesn't realize a UFC championship opportunity. For Edson Barboza, he's already entrenched as one of the best strikers in UFC history. I think a borderline Hall of Fame type guy, but probably not a UFC Hall of Famer, has as good a highlight reel as anybody in the sport. A significant setback, I think, in terms of his lightweight contention. But this is always going to be a guy who entertains and is going to find himself in big spots. In terms of the championship aspiration, this will be a tough one, I think, to come back from.
I agree. Listen, I think as far as having that mindset, it's interesting. Listen, I think that if it was up to me or if I would give advice to a fighter, I think you have to have the championship mindset. You have to be working towards a championship belt because that's what's going to propel you during your training. That's what's going to motivate you during your training, during your fights, all that stuff. If you're not looking to be the best, then what are you looking to do? Are you looking for a paycheck? Because now that motivation, now that sharpness, I think goes away. And I think we should all be trying to do things at the highest possible.
Right.
Shooting for the stars, shooting for that belt, I think is a way to do that. I think sometimes if you don't have that mindset, not to say it happens for everybody, but sometimes it can make you soft and it can make you lose some of the fights that maybe you should have won.
Sure. And I'm not saying that his kids are making him soft, right?
Sure.
He just had a baby girl. His son Noah is 4. And he said to me, and this is a direct quote, every day I do everything in training to be a champion. So it's not like he's not putting in the right work, but he just doesn't seem quite as obsessed with winning a UFC championship as you were, as Justin Gaethje was. I know your back ultimately cut short your career a little bit. I know you got a little bit of a late start, relatively speaking, but you just weren't going to be a guy who hung around for paychecks if the UFC championship opportunity wasn't coming your way.
No, no, definitely. And listen, that was my goal. If for me, if I'm going to do something, I want to try to go all in. And, you know, it didn't work out for me, but I had a lot of fun, got to face the best. And that, in the end, was what I was trying to do. And I think what every fighter really wants to do. And again, in Barbosa's case, I'm not saying that, you know, he's not giving his best. It's a different approach psychologically, and you got to do what works for you at the end of the day.
All right, a couple other things on this UFC Philadelphia card. I know you've been busy with a lot of things and didn't see all of these fights, but I have some general thoughts on some of these fights and wanted to get yours. So Michael Johnson and Josh Emmett, it was a very tactical fight. Not a lot of shots landed really on either side, but Johnson appeared to be the more effective striker. And then with less than a minute to go, I think 45 seconds, Josh Emmett just knocks him stiff. And changes, obviously, the whole complexion of that fight and Michael Johnson's immediate career. Instead of three consecutive wins for Michael the Menace Johnson and a whole lot of featherweight momentum, now he's on a losing streak. And here's a guy with 21 UFC fights. He's 11-10 and forced to sort of rebuild himself yet again. I think this is a very difficult pill to swallow for Michael Johnson. But I spent some time with him after the fight, and I said to him, you know, you're the only man in the UFC to beat Tony Ferguson. You have a win over Edson Barboza, a main event win over Dustin Poirier. I think you have to mentally be of the belief that on any given Saturday night, you can beat any featherweight in the world, including Max Holloway. And if you go back into training with that mentality, I almost think for MJ at this stage of his career, that's kind of the only way to proceed, you know, to just be long on self-belief and hope you get the right fights and the right chances.
Without a doubt, man. And you're absolutely right. I think Michael Johnson has shown flashes of brilliance in a bunch of high-level UFC fights against some excellent competition. So I think, yeah, that's where you have to kind of just build yourself back up, look at what you're doing this for, and get back in there, man. That was a devastating knockout by Emmett, and it hurts that much more, the fact that, you know, he was winning that fight. This sport is crazy, man.
Oh,
it really is crazy. You zig when you should have zagged, and that's going to be the difference. And I think it'll be a great lesson for him moving forward. Sometimes, yeah, those pills are tough to swallow, but you just have to look at what you're doing it for. You have to look at the good things also in the fight. Sometimes that can be tough to look at, but you have to look at the overall picture. Sometimes we get caught up so much in the result that we don't see all the good work that we're doing. Michael Johnson has been doing some good work, and he's also must-see TV as well, also an action-packed fighter.
I agree. I think you summed up sort of his career and the body of work pretty well. He's also talked just about having some mental lapses, right? He had a mental lapse in the Gaethje fight that cost him. Said when Khabib took him down, he just lost focus and mentally just wasn't there the rest of the fight. But he's certainly a guy who's let some opportunities slip away, but he's still got some name recognition. And I agree with you. I think he's an exciting fighter and one of the nicest guys on this roster, and he will certainly be back. The other side of this is Josh Emmett. And I'm not going to sit here and say he's the biggest power threat at 145 pounds, but he's certainly in the discussion. This knockout and the knockdown, his seventh knockdown in his last four fights at 145 pounds. And Kenny, when he lost to Jeremy Stephens at the hospital in Orlando, they missed a lot of things in terms of some of the fractures and some of the things that he was dealing with. And he told us the whole story, right? So goes back to Sacramento, multiple facial fractures, an internal fracture of his orbital floor. Wow. I mean, it was just one thing after the next. And we're sitting across from this guy on Thursday, and I'm like, oh my God. You know, my inner monologue is, hey, bro, you sure you want to hop in there with Mike? Or you just want to maybe go do something else for a living? Had vertigo after the fact. And we talk about how unforgiving and ruthless this sport is, but thrill and agony, right? Gives you an opportunity to produce something like this. And for Josh Emmett, I know he didn't get the bonus that he was looking for, and crazy to think that you can be in the Sports Center top 10 and not get a bonus. But this is just, you got to be happy for the guy, you know, whether he's your favorite fighter or not, to go through what he went through after that Jeremy Stephens fight and over the last year with all the self-doubt and all the injury and all the pain, to be able to come back and knock a guy out like that, got to be the most special night of Josh Emmett's professional life.
And talk about a gut check, man. Okay, because you look at it in boxing, mixed martial arts, kickboxing, whatever it is, some guys, and I won't say some, I'll say most guys, when your face is broken, you are rarely the same. Mm-hmm. When you know that your skull or your face can be fractured or broken, it is rare that guys come back the same and with the same style. Josh Emmett was still willing to get hit and hit himself, and he was able to go out at the knockout over a very fast and dangerous striker in Michael Johnson. So it shows that this is a courageous dude. Josh Emmett is a very good guy. He's a humble guy. And the fact that he was able to get back on his horse, recover from that nasty injury, which ended up in him losing to a very dangerous striker in Jeremy Stephens, shows that this guy truly is a real fighter and knows how to deal with adversity both in and out of the octagon.
And he was really motivated by the matchup because he knows and said as much how good Michael Johnson is. So you got to feel good for Josh Emmett. And I always say to fighters, you know, despite the fact that we had a lot of decisions on Saturday night, Kenny, there was still a lot of competition for bonus money. And to anybody out there listening that happens to be a mixed martial arts fighter in the UFC, when you go bonus begging on the microphone, it's just not always a great look. Yeah. And I'm not saying that they penalized him for doing that, but I just feel like when I've been in there more often than not, when a guy is asking for a bonus after the fact publicly on national TV, you don't cut the line and go to the front. Not saying you go to the back, but I just never think it's a good look. But certainly Josh Emmett is back and in a big way, and we'll see where he goes from here. I know you did not see the fight in its entirety between Michelle Waterson and Karolina Kowalkiewicz, but I just want to spend a few minutes on the karate hottie because she turned pro back in 2007. And, you know, former Invicta FC atomweight champion, maybe she's a natural 105-pound fighter, but when you look at her right now with the muscle mass that she's added, I think she's a bona fide strawweight. But she just does everything the right way and is such a good person. And now she has three consecutive wins, all as betting underdog against Courtney Casey, Felice Herrig, and now Karolina Kowalkiewicz. She was able to take Kowalkiewicz down. Kowalkiewicz came in with the best takedown defense statistically in UFC strawweight history. Was able to take her down, control her, great ground control from Michelle Waterson. And just to see her produce once again in a big spot. I'm not saying that she's going to get a title fight next because I think Tatiana Suarez and Nina Ansaroff are likely to have their fight produce the next number one contender, but just got to feel good for a really good woman and mother, the karate hottie, to continue on her upward trajectory here in the octagon.
Couldn't agree more with you. Michelle Waterson is one of the sweetest people you will meet in this sport. And the fact that she is improving her game and adding these new weapons, I think, is huge for her, especially in this division. We've been seeing her kind of throw in these takedowns, mix in these takedowns more in her last couple fights, right, and it is really paying off. Her ground game, her wrestling, the fact that she's doing this just adds another dimension to what she's capable of, and the fact that she was able to do this against Karolina Kowalkiewicz, who, you know, again, does have good takedown defense. And I didn't think Michelle would be able to do it and pull it off. And the fact that she was able to do it, I think, is huge. And she's on her way. Maybe she's not going to fight next, but she's a couple fights away from potentially fighting for the world championship belt. And that is huge for her. Couldn't have happened to a nicer girl. And, man, she's putting together an excellent win streak.
All right, and Jack Hermansson, he has now won three straight, five of his last six. If you don't know his backstory, his father took his own life when Jack was 9 years old. His mom, Christina, he called the most kind, warm-hearted, nicest person I've ever met. And it's really exciting for Jack to get the bonus. You know, he has major visions to try to help his mother and potentially buy her a house. And this is certainly a step in the right direction. It was an outstanding submission. He vaults into middleweight title contention. Really feel good for Jack Hermansson. And last thing before we get out of here. So Ray Borg and Casey Kenney fought to a decision. Now, I throw out my scorecard because I'm calling the fight, but most of the media believe that Ray Borg won this fight 2-1 against Casey Kenney. And I just feel really badly for Ray Borg. I know he missed weight, right? And to me, you know how little tolerance I have when guys miss weight. You know, when Violent Bob Ross won his fight a couple weeks ago, we didn't even discuss it here on the show because I don't want to dignify it as a featherweight win when a guy misses weight. Ray Borg has said there were some circumstances that resulted in him coming in heavy, and he said those will come to light eventually. So if we can table the weight miss for a second and just focus on this fight,
yeah,
And the fact that this was a prize fight for him, right? This was a money fight for him, right? With everything that his son and his family has been through, his son Anthony, who just turned one on March 27th, he's had 7 brain surgeries, hydrocephalus, it's an incurable brain disease, fluid buildup. Ray Borg's lost 6 fights over the last 2 years, some because he was dealing with his son. He had an eye laceration because of the Conor McGregor bus attack, and goes out there with all of those different emotions, Ken Flo. And even though he did miss weight, I thought he beat Casey Kenny, and that would have doubled his money. And gosh, for you and me as young fathers, I don't know, man. Like, I'm happy to have Casey Kenny in the UFC, and he certainly is a credentialed UFC fighter and a guy who I think is going to be a problem. But my heart just goes out to this Ray Borg family, man. I know that's going to fall on some deaf ears because of the weight miss, but it's just like, I don't know how much more adversity one man, one fighter can take, to be honest with you.
You know, John, a lot of times we see someone who's upset or angry, or, you know, they've fallen on hard times, and we're very quick to label that person and say, you know, that person needs to be in a better mood, or that person needs to get his shit together, that blah, blah. Try putting yourself in Ray Borg's shoes for a second, okay? Let's just, you know, the fact that he's a professional fighter working his ass off day in and day out and doesn't get a decision go his way, that is heartbreaking. And you add in the fact that him and his wife have been dealing with one of the most difficult things you need to deal with, and that's having a defenseless child deal with surgery after surgery.
Oh,
that's his welcome into this world, and you're dealing with that, not sure if your kid is going to survive the next 24 hours,
right?
Or, you know, seeing your kid in pain. And this is a baby. This isn't like a 7-8-year-old, which is tough as well, but this is his introduction into the world, and you're dealing with all this stuff. And, oh, by the way, you got to get ready for a dude who wants to punch you in the face. And you don't have a decision. I mean, it's awful, man. It's heart-wrenching. So that is really, really tough. I can't even imagine. I wish Ray the best. I hope that there's other ways that he can make that money back. But, man, you know, the only thing I can see is there's got to be something that's in store for him. There's some kind of lesson or some kind of light at the end of the tunnel for him and his family. And I hope they find it soon, man. It's, man, what a last couple years for him.
It's crazy, man. He's 25 years old. And I mean, I can add more to the story and make
I'm
it feel
sure
worse,
can.
Right? I mean, he had a GI tear and kidney issues that prevented him from taking one fight. Right before the Demetrius Johnson fight, he took custody of his 7-year-old niece, who he's now raising because there are just some family issues there that he's dealing with. It was a 539-day layoff for Ray Borg. And there have been a lot of people, Brendan Schaub chief among them, that have really helped him financially as he tries to navigate this. But my heart goes out to Ray Borg, and it was certainly hard to see him after the fact, but hopefully better days ahead for the Taz Mexican Devil, Ray Borg. All right, we got to bounce on out of here. BattleBots beckons, huh? You got BattleBots next week. When are you starting? What is it, season 4?
It's season 4, my man. It'll be on Discovery Channel. I think we start sometime near the middle of April. So getting ready for that, and excited. Filming that here in SoCal, and can't wait, my man.
Sounds good, man. All right, we are back with you next Monday, the 8th of April. We will update the main event challenge standings at that time. You can see just how swollen this lead is for Team Attic. And we've also got at least 7 predictions, I believe, coming your way for UFC 236. Holloway versus Poirier 2, and also the interim middleweight championship fight between Israel Adesanya and Kelvin Gastelum. First title fight for both Gastelum and Adesanya. That should be good, too.
Ooh, that's good. I like that.
All right, with that, for Ray Longo, TJ DeSantis, and Ken Flo, John Anik saying so long for now. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you in less than 7 days. Until then, Justin Gaethje, it's your world, baby. We're just living in it. Yo, fucking later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storyline. lines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Gardening Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.